You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? Are you going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up, but that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental at MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe in the green room. David Goss, Bobby Warshaw, back. I'm not going to say I feel the love, but I don't feel quite as alone as I did last week.
Well, so. Me and Bobby have been rooming together for 10 straight days.
Oh.
So.
Big show coming up for you, but obviously we've been on something that we must delve into.
Yeah, super excited to be around Bobby again. Can't wait.
I missed you last night.
Yeah, for sure.
I was sad waking up without you this morning.
Oh, wow.
Bobby, I think that's Bobby right slept through the night because I've been coughing for the last 10 straight days.
Gotcha. So that's what I was going to ask is who makes the most noise while they sleep? Who's the noisiest sleeper?
Clearly me.
You've
I talk
sick.
In my sleep and I
you
cough.
You talk. Yeah. What does he talk about, Bobby?
One night he called a game. I woke up and David was like, and he makes the pass wide. He goes at him 1v1.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
It was clearly it was a more exciting game than the actual games we were watching.
Who's the one who... I don't want to call you messy, but like maybe doesn't treat the hotel room like they treat their own abode.
I think we were pretty equal on that.
You guys
that.
Are good?
Yeah. We were great. Yeah, we were both fine.
Okay.
Neither of us were pristine.
David's an excellent roommate.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed our time together.
Bobby, is there a like code of conduct among professional players as road roommates? Are there things that you...
He's definitely more comfortable in a hotel than me. Like he leaves the room with the door open. That's something I would never do.
And well,
I
was you're like, a New Yorker. You don't trust anyone.
Well, I was like, that's definitely a, like,
gotcha.
I live
so
in
So he throws
hotels.
A little, you know, by the way, Zlatan, El Trafico, MLS Week 5, Francisco Calvo's lack of respect comments, CCL Fever, it's all coming, but I want to dig in here.
Yeah, for sure.
Sometimes you have a roommate that you just don't like. What are some of the things you need to talk about with your roommate? Do you want to wake up to natural light? I mean, these are little things you don't think about playing on the road. If you need to wake up to natural light and your roommate wants to sleep in, all of a sudden you're waking up at funny times, not the same way. The big thing is the temperature. Some people like the room really cold. Some people don't. I would say those are the two biggest conversations you have with roommates.
Are you a natural light guy or wake up whenever you personally wake up type of guy?
I need to have natural light. If I sleep until 8:30 in a dark room, my whole day is ruined. I feel groggy and tired, even for a 7 p.m. game.
Okay. I would want it cold in that room. So that's just me.
Yeah, I also wake up at like 10 and Bobby's left, but I hear breathing, and then all of a sudden he pops up. He's been doing sit-ups on the other side of the bed for half an hour, and you're like, oh, someone is here. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Cool, me too.
Okay, Sam Stachel is coming up. Gam Tam and Sam. Ashley Cole of the LA Galaxy. We're going to chat with him because, I don't know, something happened this week. And Ariel Castillo's in for the mailbag today. There's that cough that Bobby Warshaw knows so well. But first, I mean, let's start with the obvious. Zlatan. Look, Zlatan. Zlatan. What, Zlatan, Bobby?
Ibrahimovic?
Ibra? Zlatan? Okay, fine. We're past that. Zlatan Ibrahimovic did something that I think is going to be a part of this league's lore for basically the rest of its existence here. LA Galaxy down 3-0 in the first El Trafico. Carlos Vela stole the show in the first half. A beautiful curling goal in the fifth minute with his left foot. 26, he chips over the top, off the crossbar and in. Daniel Styris has a miserable own goal to start the second half, and everybody's thinking LAFC are about to land the ultimate haymaker in a city that they've been making fun of because, you know, they have their old Carson jokes that don't feel quite so funny anymore. And then all of a sudden, things turned around. You start having this Zlatan chance. Sebastian Legette scores the goal. Chris Pontius dunks on João Moutinho. And Zlatan does what Zlatan does. 40 yards out, he whips in the half volley. 90 plus one, he gets the goal. The offside line is afraid of him and bends around him, although I think it was onside. Just going to throw that out there. I mean, this – I don't know what you guys were doing. I wasn't there. I was in this office –
we were in a bar watching this game going
jumping
nuts.
Up and down giddy, just yelling, just because it was just so incredible
well,
as
game,
a moment.
The game was so open that we were yelling the whole time because it's like there was just chances left and right and left and right. Obviously, LAFC could have been up like 6-0. So that was like had me up. And then obviously they score, LA Galaxy score, and you're like, I don't know. I got a feeling here something crazy is about to happen, but not. Did not anticipate what did occur.
How did
a 40-yard volley.
Yeah.
The exact same as you guys. No analysis, just enjoyed it. We both ended up standing behind our seats, arms in the air, yelling at the screen. You should enjoy a game.
That goal from Zlatan. Some people are out there saying, oh, terrible defending. And I do have to ask.
Defending or
Tyler,
goalkeeping?
I think goalkeeping, because Tyler Miller, you know, I don't know, he's in no man's land. He had just taken the free kick there over out of his goal outside the 18-yard box. He's got to get back. But he's also not thinking this ball is going to be stuffed back down my throat and Zlatan's going to have it on the half volley. Perfect bounce from an angle to where he can just lash it over my head. And this wasn't a chip. This wasn't like David Villa. This was, oh, I see this. I'm going to hit it as hard as I can with stupid bend. Is that a slice? Is that a fade?
If you haven't seen the goal from the angle behind the goal, go watch it now.
It is 5 to 10 yards outside of the goal when he starts it. And he brings it back into basically the middle with power. I mean, it's just one of those moments that is going everywhere. I mean, you look around. It's on House of Highlights, which I think that's the first time I've ever seen MLS on House of Highlights. It's going up in all these different countries. The goal call on Fox Deportes is just bonkers, as you would expect it to be. Those guys are losing their minds. It's like they're having aneurysms when they have no control of their voices. I mean, John Strong had an epic call, I thought. And, Dave, you pay a lot more attention to this than I do.
Yeah, I agree. That's how I would have handled that as well. Are you kidding me?
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Like, because that's the way everybody felt. As you watch it, you just can't believe it.
Just
and then
stop.
You do believe the winner in the 90+1. And
yeah,
we'll
you
talk
knew
about,
that was coming.
We'll talk about the stakes for both these teams in a second because it was a high-stakes game. And Ashley Cole will fill us in a little bit as well. But was that goal offside? Bobby, we already argued this one out.
Hashtag instant replay.
Everybody knows what I think on instant replay. But to give him a tease, you thought it was off.
I just think it was off. It was offsides, guys. Deep in our hearts, I can't prove my point except just look at it.
He keeps over and over. He's like,
but you guys know
hearts,
too.
And I'm like, my heart doesn't feel that.
Everyone knows this. Everyone that watched that play looks like Stu Holden put out the angle.
Yeah.
But it's like 5 yards ahead. There's an angle you could always use to prove something in your life. If you actually watch the play, Zlatan is neither behind the ball nor is there a defender in front of him. He's offside. The question is it? I would argue it's clear and obvious.
No,
but
it's not. It's not. You could say it's off, and it should be called off in the game, but there's no way you can say from the angles that you have that it's clear and obvious in either direction. So it's the call on the field, and it's the call on the field.
The better argument to me is if he's off by 2 inches, is that what we want from soccer?
Soccer Photonometry came out, and if you don't follow them on Twitter, you should. Basically, they go back and look at these close plays and use mathematical models to figure out based on angles and – you know, I'm not going to go math.
No, but so you had this conversation on Twitter. We talked with Howard Webb in the stadium before the game, not in like an official capacity, just chatting.
Right, at GA Cup?
Because he was the assistant VAR on the game, the most overqualified assistant VAR ever.
The GA Cup game, not the LA.
In the GA Cup game. And he was saying, because of mid-frames, so like when you break down a video, you can't always get the exact strike of the ball. Those lines become difficult to use because they can't always be used.
Right.
So if you bring that in and use those, it can't work 100% of the time. So do you bring it in at all? And then on the other point of Bobby's point, if he's a quarter of a piece of an inch off with his heel, is that what you want VAR to do? Some people will say yes, and some people will say no.
And those people that say yes, I can't wrap my minds around the way that they experienced the game.
See, now you're coming along, though, because now
you're acknowledging
that
he's offside. Oh, no, I actually say yes.
Oh, wait, wait, hold on. Maybe I just got that wrong. I'm saying, like, if it's a fourth of an inch, throw that right out the window because that doesn't
matter. No, I agree. I disagree with you.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Oh, you're saying that fourth
matters. If I'm watching on video and I have 100% proof that a guy
is a
tiny –
that's 100%. This soccer photonometry has all these angles, has math, and he says he thinks it's 6 inches. He can't
be
sure.
I'm not saying this example. I'm saying in other examples. If you can prove very small amount.
If he's off, he's off. But if it's like we're not sure, it's not 100%.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And look, 100% is a threshold. I don't think anybody's ready to actually meet in any way on this.
Right.
You can't call it back. And he says soccer photonometry that it's 6 inches. But he's not sure. Once again, it goes back to frames, which I experienced trying to go through it frame by frame. You just can't find that exact perfect moment. And then he's even. If it's 6 inches, come on, he's even. He's basically even. Let it stand. Zlatan.
You know who disagrees with you?
Who?
Math.
Math's not a person, Bobby. Math's a concept.
Bobby, math is lame. No one wants to talk to math.
Let's just call it what it is. Mathematically, he's offside, but as a culture, we need to decide what range and standard deviation do we accept as being onside. That's what this conversation is about. Do we want a soccer culture in a league where if you're an inch offside, it's offside, or we should always give this quote-unquote freeze frame advantage where we can never be 100% sure? Do we always want to give that field?
Because I don't think you can like if the flag goes up, everybody's probably sitting back saying, you know what? Sucks that that moment got taken away because it's an epic moment in the history of Major League Soccer and the galaxy and in this rivalry. But you know what? We can all see it. It's right there. But I think the mere fact that we have sat around here for 5 minutes and tried to determine that tells you it's not
which
clear.
Which goes back to the original point of VAR, by the way, is that the center ref then has to watch the play because it's still his game. And if you bring the ref to the side and you show him a bunch of replays, he's in the exact same position he was live, which is, I don't know.
Well, the
it's
goal,
a hair, and I made
the goal counted. Zlatan gets two. We'll talk more about him throughout the mailbag. We got a bunch of mail on that. Ariel Castillo was at the StubHub Center. She will join us. But let's talk stakes here for these two teams because the build-up to this, you know, we did like 50 minutes on this, and I promise you everybody who's sitting around saying, I'm tired of the LA Galaxy, I'm tired of LAFC, I'm tired of El Trafico, we're about to move on.
But also, you watched every MLS game this weekend. Every broadcast mentioned this, local broadcast.
For good reason.
Every single person. So this isn't just like we're talking about the big story. This was the thing that happened in everyone's MLS realm this weekend.
LAFC had an opportunity here to land, as I said, that kind of like wouldn't have been a sucker punch because we all kind of saw it coming a little bit, given that there was no Alessandrini, there was no Gio Dos Santos, no Jonah Dos Santos in this team or even in this squad for Siggy Schmidt. So these lineups trotted out, and I said to myself, oh boy, LAFC's had time to prepare. They've had two big wins already. They may just slap up the Galaxy in what is a very big game for both sides' kind of quote-unquote identity or the beginnings of that identity in the rivalry. They had an opportunity here, and you could see it in Bob Bradley and his face and his voice afterwards, just kind of lamenting, I think, the naivety of his team and also a little bit of softness. Because to lose after you're up 3-0, that's a little soft. It is. It's only happened one other time in MLS, and it was last year, the Sounders beating DC United. Like, this was an opportunity that LAFC just straight blew.
Yeah. I can't. There's no other way. If I was a fan, it's better to lose. Maybe that's not true, but I think it's better to lose this way than to go out and lose 2-0. You had those moments where you had, like, excitement for the 60 minutes where you're like, we just blew out our opponent. And then, obviously, the way it ends isn't great. But there was no expectations from LAFC. I know they've started this season well, but you're on the road. You've been on the road all season. You're a brand-new team. You have a DP that you haven't even brought in yet. You have a short squad still, even though they haven't had to play a ton of games. So I don't think there was expectations coming into the game. Then you go up 3-0 and there's expectations. But I don't think that this is some – for example, this isn't the Red Wedding where NYCFC got obliterated by Red Bulls. They were the new team. They had never won anything. And then that was the reality of the rivalry. I don't think that it was – this was that moment.
I would love to hear from people listening what they think happened to LAFC that they capitulated. I would argue it has something to do with the two center midfielders that Kay and Failhaber – just don't have the right attributes to sit deep and take on pressure like that. They're good at 9 out of 10 things, but the one thing they're not good at is dealing with a game like that. But I'd be interested to hear what other people saw.
Well, look, the first goal comes from Servando Carrasco pushing up, getting some pressure, getting a turnover, and then Legette with just a one-time finish. And then you look, Galaxy were on the back foot basically the whole game until that, and mostly because they were just giving the ball away in terrible positions. Like that Carlos Vela goal, the first one's a great goal. But Ima Boateng, just crazy. Just what's going on? Like, why are you trying to dribble out of pressure in that position after you've already been pinned in your own third? And that happened over and over to a variety of players on the Galaxy. And once they eliminated that, and once they got on the front foot a little bit, despite the fact they didn't have their top end talent,
I don't think they ever eliminated that. It was just being efficient when you go forward. And I was saying to Bobby the whole game, their fullbacks basically play as wingers the entire time, and they don't have great center backs. So when the fullbacks put in quality service and they score goals, it's great. When they don't, they're, like, lost going back the other way. No one's comfortable defending 1v1 in that entire Galaxy team. Maybe Perry Kitchen, my guy Perry Kitchen, who I will die on a hill for right now because that guy's out here alone just facing against the hordes as they charge down. People are out here like, Perry Kitchen. I'm like, bro, you could put Conte in there with a bunch of people who don't want to defend, and he would struggle to keep a team from scoring. And that right now is the Galaxy. Is like, they got to figure out if they're going to try and win every game 7-6, then it's going to be super entertaining this season. I'm in for it. But that's right now the way they're built, because Fleischer's flying forward, Ashley Cole's flying forward, and you don't have center backs that are elite at defending by themselves 1v1.
Well, let's talk to Ashley Cole. Let's bring on now Ashley Cole, the captain of the Galaxy, witness to one of the most incredible afternoons we have ever seen in this league. Ashley, how's it going? Zlatan's world, we're just living in it, right?
Yeah, we're just passers by in these young worlds.
So after this game, we had an interview with you on the field, and you didn't look surprised, but you looked a little bit giddy. What was it like to be on the field, to watch this all go down? I mean, I was jumping up and down yelling when Zlatan scored the third, and we scored the fourth. I just kind of threw my hands up. How did you experience this?
Yeah, it's great. I think it was, you know, kind of great advert for the league, advert for the kind of the rivalry in the city. And, you know, it was a kind of big talk before the game. Will he play? Will he not play? And you know, you're looking at the clock to see when's he actually going to come on. And 3-0 down, you think, okay, he might get one, two goals. But the way it kind of ended and for him, the story started was brilliant for LA.
That ball bounces, Ashley. You're basically down the line watching it. Do you think there's any chance he's about to shoot it?
If I'm honest, yes. I see the goalie off the line and I'm... You know, I've played against him many times. I know his quality. So as soon as he hit it, I knew, you know, it was going to go in and the fight back was on, to be honest.
And then after that, at 3-3, is there any doubt in your mind he's about to score the winner?
No. To be honest, I think everyone was tired at the time. And, you know, they put me left wing at the time. And I'm like, oh, do I really have to run for this ball that Pedro gives me? And, you know, I just thought, let me just try and put it in the box. And with him, you know, he's so hungry to score and to win. It was a perfect header and a kind of perfect end to the great game.
You said, and these are the comments that got blown up, I know you know how this goes, even though he's old like me, you said he'd find it easy in MLS, to be honest. That easy, though? I mean, what makes it so easy for a guy like Zlatan? Take us inside from a player's perspective. What makes him so great?
I just think he has... Technically, he has everything, and he has a brain to go with it. So when you kind of add them together, I think for sure he's going to do well. You see in his first game, he just got off a flight probably the night before. He didn't even train with us on the Friday, and then he gets put in 15 minutes to go, and he does what he did. So, you know, he has a lot of quality, a lot of hunger and desire, and he wants to win. I don't think he come here to kind of sit around. He still has a name to kind of protect, so you know you're going to get hopefully the best of him, and that was just a kind of a little glimpse of what he can give, and hopefully we hope that for us this season he's going to score more goals, which I think he's definitely going to score more goals for sure.
You mentioned he comes in, doesn't have a lot of time with the team. What was the first interaction like? Take us into, I mean, we know the big personality, we know the clips. What was he like as an actual person and for a lot of these LA Galaxy players meeting him for the first time?
Well, he's the same. You know, he comes in, he has the swagger about him. He still comes in with the one-liners and, you know, you have to laugh. But, no, he's a serious guy. You know, when he comes in the change room, like, we went outside to train for the first time and the first thing he says is, I'm here to win, you know. And he shows it on the pitch. He's not just a talker. When he talks, he kind of follows through with his actions. And on Saturday, he showed it. But we know he's got a big personality and, you know, hopefully he's going to bring that kind of onto the pitch and kind of influence us and make us kind of better as people and better as a team.
Ashley, there's two kind of polar opposites in this game, and you mentioned it there. You experienced it on the field. The Galaxy are down 3-0 at home in the first ever El Tráfico, the first rivalry game between these two teams. Those black and gold fans are going crazy. I'm sure they're making jokes about Carson, everything else. And I'm sitting there thinking, wow, this could not go worse, honestly, right now for the Galaxy. And then you have the flip side of the way you leave this game, kind of waving those fans out the exit saying, oh, you thought you had something that you didn't. What did this mean to the club, the LA Galaxy? And what was... I think we have to say it, a huge kind of formational game for both them and LAFC.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, you have to give them credit. I think they're a new franchise. They're coming to league. They've brought in some very good players, young players. a good manager who kind of knows the league as well. So they're a dangerous team. They know, we knew they play on a counter-attack. They've got young players that want to run. So for me, for the cities, I think it's great, you know, for LA. But of course, Galaxy's been around a long time. We want to be kind of known for the team in LA, not LAFC. So it was a great game. You know, at halftime, we're down and we're thinking, can this get any worse? And then, of course, we can see the third goal. And then, you know, we all come together, worked hard. And of course, the rest is history.
You start out this game, though, like you mentioned, down 3-0. You've been a part of some of the best defenses in world history. What do you diagnose as the issues right now for this LA Galaxy backline?
Yeah, they're a new team. They come into it, we kind of probably didn't expect. We expected, we watch videos on them, but, you know, when it's live, we kind of find it a little bit difficult. But, you know, in the end, we kind of look back and we'll watch video probably in a few days and kind of, as you said, diagnose what kind of went wrong. But the finishes are good finishes. You know, there you have Carlos Vela, who's been around a long time, even at kind of a youngish age, and he scored great goals and he scored two good goals at the weekend. But no, as a team, we know what we've got to do better. We'll go through the video, like I said, and kind of change that for Saturday's game, or Sunday's game, sorry, against Kansas City.
Ashley, you've got the C. You're wearing the armband for this team, and it's a big year for the Galaxy, not just because of this rivalry, but because last year was just not as good as you guys wanted it to be, one of those years that you'd like to forget. When you got that honor from Siggy Schmidt, how do you view it? How do you view your role on this team as a leader? What do you need to bring in a club that has Zlatan, that has the Dos Santos brothers, that has Alessandrini? Who do you need to be?
For me, I just need to be, you know, myself and try kind of demand how I kind of been brought up is to win, to work hard for each other. But like you mentioned, we have other, it's not just me. I wear the captain's armband, but I need kind of these guys to step up and sometimes kind of take the role for themselves. They've been around a long time. So at the end of the day, we just got to come together as a team and try and motivate each other, get the best out of each other every day in training, and then take that into the weekend.
Given the history of this club, Ashley, do you feel a lot of responsibility or pressure with that armband and what happened last year to turn things around?
Yeah, not so much pressure. You know, it's my first time kind of being a captain of a team from the start. So, like I mentioned, I kind of need people like Zlatan, and, you know, who sit next to me, but like people like Chris Pontius and the Gio brothers, you know, Santos brothers, that they need to kind of, we all need to come together, and I definitely need their help in terms of if something's gone wrong. It's not just me kind of pointing the finger. Everyone has to be accountable for kind of their actions on the pitch. And again, like I said, we have to come together and work on the training field, and hopefully that comes out on Saturdays and Sundays we play. But we definitely have to kind of stick together and be the team that we are.
Before I let you go, Ashley, I need your best Zlatan story. This week's great, but you've played against him in a World Cup, I think. You've seen him throughout your career. What's your favorite Zlatan story of all time? Maybe one that you were involved in?
To be fair, I haven't really got a story that I can just kind of... I don't really have one, to be honest. You know, I've played against him, but when it comes onto the pitch, it's kind of business. I don't really talk. I would have probably tried to kick him at the time, and maybe he would have been too fast and too strong. Like I said, he's a great character, and I bet you'll be probably seeing and hearing a lot of him.
I have no doubt about that. Ashley Cole, captain of the Galaxy, a huge win in El Tráfico. Ashley, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you, guys.
Big thanks to Ashley Cole for joining us there before training here on this Monday. Before we move on, big question for you guys. Best game of all time in Major League Soccer? What do you think? Yes or no? What's your gut? What's your gut? Because I think about, like, you know, the game that got me into this league realistically was that Beckham Giants Stadium game. That game just, like, it hit me in a place that this game did as well, where it's just kind of pure emotion and excitement. I'd also throw out there the Montreal-Toronto playoff game.
Oh, you can't count postseason games in this. Can you?
Can you?
Oh, I didn't know that that's where we were going. Okay. I thought we were saying regular season.
Okay, let's just say regular season then.
Yeah,
you
don't think it wouldn't
eclipse that one then because of the stakes.
Postseason, yeah.
Right, okay.
No, but this one, I think it is. But for one of the reasons, Bobby's going to get so upset right now because we've been talking about this for a week, for many of the reasons that the league has gotten better. The in-stadium product of this game is better than the Beckham one. The broadcast is better. The quality of the field is better. Like, all those little things that have improved over the last 10 years make it so that this is a more enjoyable moment.
And also,
plus, there's a ton of talent on the field, which was how I felt when I watched that Beckham Red Bull game. You were like, oh, my God, Josie and Juan Pablo Angel and Beckham and Landon. Like, it was impressive.
Yeah.
And this one was as well.
Pescadito in that game, too, by the way. Just throwing it out there. He's everywhere, baby. He's everywhere.
Was Josie on the field for that game?
Yeah,
he scored like 2 goals.
Yeah.
The answer is MLS Cup 96. You can
No, we just said you can't include postseason. That's like the most Bobby thing of all time.
You can include playoff games in this. The question is it the best MLS game of all time? And
so no.
It's 96.
Okay, fine. Bobby, I don't want to belabor this point with you. Let's belabor a different point entirely. We'll get to the weekend here. A ton of storylines to talk about. Orlando getting past the Red Bulls. 4-3 win for them.
Bobby,
they
that game was played in like
it.
A driving storm.
Yeah. Bobby, this is just Bobby romanticizing things from Mechanicsburg.
That's the point. That's how these things – you can either go immediacy and say this one,
Bobby,
which would be obvious, or it's how you remember things.
So this is probably what happened. Correct me if I'm wrong here,
I'm not even sure I watched 96.
I'm sure you didn't. I'm positive you didn't.
I was going to say, if he did – he waited till the next rainstorm, and he got like his brother to go throw him balls or cross him balls, and he tried to replicate the Eddie Pope header.
That's right. Exactly,
and that's
right.
How Bobby Warshaw would experience it. Or he would just go out in a driving rainstorm for 90 minutes, It would have been 120, just to see how
– golden goal, too.
Right, just to see how – or however many minutes now, where it's changing, to see how he would be affected. You ran that
entire
time,
probably.
If we were
to take a poll of good ETR listeners, they would pick the 96 Cup over this game.
Okay, ETR listeners, let us know what you think. 401-206-0MLS.
Let us know if you're Bobby Warshaw's sheep or if you're a true fan.
I said good ETR listeners.
Right. Are you wolves? Are you lions? Or are you Bobby Warshaw's sheep? We're going to get to everything else. Orlando, Toronto FC, first win. NYCFC, top of the table. Kai Kamara got it done against his old club, Columbus Crew. Dom Baji, shout out to Baji for his first ever professional hattie. Montreal road win, New England, Sebastian Blanco, yada, yada, yada. But look, Francisco Calvo had some harsh words, and I think in part they were directed toward us. Maybe that's me being a little bit vain, but I think when he says Major League Soccer, he means MLSsoccer.com. This was after Minnesota lost 1-0 at home to 10-man Atlanta United. Quote from Francisco Calvo, quote, "I know you're not asking this, but I want to say this. I'm tired of how Major League Soccer gives a lot of credit to Atlanta or beep at LAFC. It's weird. If Minnesota wins, it's Minnesota wins. If Atlanta or LAFC wins, they make a show. I don't know why. I think we deserve more respect in this league, and I'm tired of that." He's asked, "How long have you felt that this was the case?" Here's Calvo's answer. "Ever since our first season, so last year. You can say whatever you want, but the LA Galaxy were worse than us last year. I don't know. We were one of the last teams to beat Atlanta in Atlanta, you know? I think this year is going to be different. The people who are saying stupid things about us, they're going to shut their mouths up and see how Minnesota does." Those are strong words. Those are strong words. Francisco Calvo went in.
Yeah.
I appreciate that from him. No doubt about it. And maybe now we're about to say some stupid things.
I wrote about Minnesota positively twice last week, so this is on you guys.
I put Minnesota in my stock up after they won 2 games.
And we said
we'd stop making winger jokes, but then they started signing Darwin Quintero.
And now they're rumored after another winger.
So it kind of like the joke kind of makes itself.
Yeah.
Like it's not really a joke anymore. It's mostly just us, you know.
I don't know. I watch them play. I like Abu Dunlady. I think Francisco Calvo is good. I think everyone in this room, by the way.
I need to stop you right now. Because he doesn't care about – this is not a factual argument by him.
Yeah.
He doesn't care. This is Francisco Calvo playing mind games. I mean, when Chelsea lost the first game of the season 2 years ago, what did Jose Mourinho talk about after the game?
I don't know. I don't pay attention to what Jose Mourinho says.
Yeah.
He talked about the physio messing up. He didn't talk about the game because this is what you do. If you lose a bad game like this, you talk about anything but the result. Because now what are we talking about? We're talking about the quote. We're talking about ourselves. Instead of the fact that Minnesota just friggin' lost at home and he gave up the own goal.
Man up for 65.
Yeah. You see what golden. Francisco Calvo knew what he was doing, and it's brilliant. Good for him. He's a good leader. He made the right decision.
But he's not making a factual point. He doesn't care about making a factual point. He's making a distraction so we don't talk about his teammates.
And he may have been feeling this for a long time, which it's clear that he is based on his words. But this, as you're saying, is a good time to come out and say it. Like, after they win, everybody's kind of like, oh, yeah, Francisco Cabo is right. But after they lose, we're still going to talk about the fact that they lost and they were not good in this game and they didn't have any real ideas against a 10-man team in conditions that Atlanta United should not be better than they are. Should not be. Just – no, I'm sorry. You're the team from Minnesota. Be the team from Minnesota. Play in the freezing cold when the water bottles are freezing. And everybody's like, they have no, they have like a million passes.
Bobby, I also
three
wonder,
shots on goal.
I also wonder if going into this game, the Atlanta Minnesota comparisons that were being made
inevitably
over the course of a
yeah.
week helps affect whether he was going to say this, whether he was going to say this or not if they won. I think that part of that comes out as he starts, you know, it being pushed in his face of how great Atlanta has been since they've entered the league at the exact same moment and how poor Minnesota is. By the way, that's not media coverage. That is the reality of the results since the two teams have stepped on the field.
Yeah.
That was all.
No doubt. I think, and I look, do Minnesota deserve more respect? I'm sorry, but like you beat Orlando who had none of their players basically. It was a good win in Orlando. And you got props for that win, by the way. It wasn't like people were coming out and saying, like, oh, man, you know, this is only Orlando. We said great performance from Ethan Finley. Look, you guys are you're building something here. You got a road win. That's a good thing. But context always matters. So if you want to sit back and say, oh, well, you didn't give us proper respect for that win, I'm sorry. Can we not mention the fact that your opponent was shorthanded? Can we not mention the fact that a week later at home against Chicago, Chicago were just bad? It's a bad team. Just like last year when people beat Minnesota, apologies because this kind of hits close to home there, especially early in the season, nobody was saying that they were the juggernaut of all time. They were saying, wow, Vadim Demidov can't do it at this level, and Minnesota don't have it figured out on the back line. They're not very good right now. And when Minnesota got better and went and beat Atlanta, we gave them props because that was a great result and a good win, and the second half of last year was pretty good for Minnesota given everything that has happened. But you just haven't proven it. And you haven't proven it week to week. You've got three losses in five games, and you just lost with 10 men. I just – the timing of it – the timing of it is – it's just – to me, I was
but
like,
that's
wait,
Bobby's
what?
Point.
Right. And,
but that's
Bobby,
Bobby's
that's
point.
A great
He's
explanation for Bobby. Because I didn't really think about it that
we
way.
Haven't,
I should have.
We haven't talked for a second here, except for one half mention that they failed to break down a team that they were up a man against and couldn't score. Not that they couldn't win. They could not score a goal at home for 60 minutes, man up.
I mean, against an Atlanta, they barely put a shot on
against
goal.
An Atlanta team,
with
Chris by the way.
McCann at center back.
Exactly. That is not historically a defensive juggernaut.
And who lost Jeff Winowitz in this game,
mm-hmm.
who we've said over and over is a crucial part.
Mm-hmm.
So, look, Minnesota, you're better than some people make you out to be. But I don't think there's a situation here where it's like
Bobby's disagreeing.
There's not two sides to every story. There is no second side to this. They don't get more coverage because they don't deserve more coverage.
Or they don't get positive coverage. That's, they do get coverage.
Look, I think there is – I think a lot of people that hit us up are right in some ways about kind of the balance of coverage. Sometimes. But, look, and when Darwin Quintero got signed – Paul Tenorio wrote a big in-depth piece about what that was about. We did a reaction. We blew it up on social media. We were talking about it. We were saying, wow, they signed their first ever DP. We covered it. It was a big story. Deservedly so. You were in the news for that. Just like deservedly so, you'll be in the news for losing 1-0 at home to a 10-man team when you say you're a playoff team. Because that's not what playoff teams do. So, sorry, Minnesota. Tough result for you. We would love to know what you think here. Hit us up as far as the rest of the week in here before we get to CCL Fever in the second segment because, yes, rub your hands together, everyone. We have two semifinals starting this week, Tuesday and Wednesday, Toronto FC, Club America, and Chivas Guadalajara, New York Red Bulls. That's great. Gam Tam and Sam will be here as well, and, of course, Ariel Castillo in the mailbag. What else did you take away from the weekend? What's the thing that kind of, like, that stands out to you that you feel strongly about?
NYCFC are going to win Supporters Shield.
You think
I said it before the season. I still say it. They can win games in more than one way now, and they have enough pieces where if they lose one or two big pieces, they can still get wins, which wasn't the case over the last years. AKA, if David Villa wasn't in, it was going to be ugly, but Jesus Medina is a guy you can play through. They have creative pieces off the bench who can create goals, create moments, and they've got a ton of depth along a back line that has always been thin. I mean, they've got three or four starting fullbacks for a team where they pulled RJ Allen out of a youth club to start like 16 games in their first year. So this result for them in San Jose, to me, was what you need to see from a Supporters Shield winning team. And they're undefeated so far to start the year.
Yeah.
And that all just runs along with what they've been able
to do.
The
other thing which John Denso will remind us about, one of our listeners, he's blown us up all the time about this. This year matters big time for CCL because over the combination of last year and this year, whoever has the most points that doesn't qualify through MLS Cup or Open Cup or whatever else is going to have that CCL spot. New York City FC want that. They want the Supporters Shield. I think when you look at New York City FC, and we talked about the Red Wedding and we talked about El Tráfico, they're a case study of why I think two teams in LA is going to be really good for both teams. Because we've seen in New York that it is undoubtedly driven both forward. It's forced both to kind of crystallize their identity. And I think NYCFC has done that in shedding the Lampards and the Pirlos of the world and going to this, you know, young core, deep scouting network, you know, building a squad as opposed to just building around a couple guys. It's been a great start for them this year. Patrick Vieira has to be happy with that 2-1 win in San Jose. Bobby, what are you thinking about?
I think you guys said it. There just wasn't a weekend with that many other storylines.
You don't think so?
The big ones.
You don't think Orlando was a big storyline? At home, 4-3 against the Rebels, needed that win. Dom Dwyer is back. Sasha Kleshin gets 2 assists.
We wouldn't talk about Orlando until they have Uri Rosell on the field. I said at the beginning of the season, they could sign everyone else, that Uri was going to be the most important player on that team, the most important sign-in.
But we did see for the first time them play the formation that Uri Rosell will step into. That 4-2-3-1, with those pieces, that's how it looks. You don't think so, Bobby?
I don't know what formation they're going to play. I don't care, because he was going to be the glue that held all the parts together. So I just wish we hadn't talked about Orlando at all until we actually saw what they're going
to
be.
But, Bobby, we have to talk about Orlando. They just won at home. We've been bagging on them for being under pressure for, like, the better part of 2 months.
Did that win relieve pressure?
That's the question. Performance? Did it? I don't know. What do you think it meant?
It didn't, but it doesn't mean anything until, with the way the playoffs work, you don't need to stress over these first 5 or 6 games. If you're good to very good in the last 30, when you've got your real team together, so Orlando's big thing is not to stress until they have their real team together.
But it's nice to get wins in that not to stress time.
Dom Dwyer, how did he change the way they play?
The way he's going to is, like, he's, one, going to create half chances where other guys aren't because of his athleticism, his strength, his ability, I don't know what you call it, to just bully guys around and change the game a little bit.
He and Aurelien Collin basically, I mean, this was off the ropes for the better part of 90 minutes.
Yeah, it was awesome.
These two were just, it was seriously
super entertaining.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
So Dom's going to give them all of that, and he's more mobile than anyone else up there, so he can cover more ground by himself, which allows Miram and whoever else is going to play on the other side. It was Coleman in the second half to kind of just do their roles. They don't have to, I think, worry about the spacing as much because Dom's going to take care of a lot of that. It's a dangerous team. Defensively, they're awful at times. This was Sané's first game.
No, he's played before.
Second, okay. Yeah. He had some okay moments. El Munier has had some really bad moments. So that part they still have to figure
this
out.
This is a Red Bulls team that was not playing the big guns in preparation for
baby
CCL.
Bulls, baby. Three Red Bulls, two guys get goals in this game. Let's go. That gets me pumped.
Yeah. I don't think I put it in the mailbag, but there was a mailbag comment that, like, when I said you guys weren't here and I said, okay, what are some cliche lines that I should use to pretend I'm Dave?
Red Bulls 2?
Yeah, Red Bulls 2 is yours.
Yeah, they're going to win CCL. The New York Red Bulls 2 are going to win CCL.
Nice. I think one thing that I would pick up from this game is for the Red Bulls, you kind of throw this one out the window, but I do wonder what Kamar Lawrence was doing on the second Dom Dwyer goal. He's, like, tracking him, then he's pointing at him, then he's letting him go in behind on the throw, and then he's grabbing his hamstring. Like, those are the moments that cannot happen in CCL. Those are the moments that see your CCL campaign go, like, straight down the tubes. We'll talk about the Rebels in a second. Was that a foul, by the way, on Dom Dwyer on Luis Robles? He, like, pushes him into the back.
I know. I just hate the protection of goalkeepers.
I know. It is something that I'm on that as well.
Because if that's a center
protection.
Back, it's fine. Right?
Sure, but it's not.
Okay.
It's a goalkeeper trying to go play the ball.
Yes. I can't. I have nothing to add to
this. What do you think, Bobby?
I don't have a good answer. I'd be fine with the call either way.
Yeah. Other things from the weekend, though, I thought the Houston-Revs game kind of stood out. I know Houston went down a man, but Albert Elise, we talked about at the beginning of the season, he's electric, but he's not super efficient. I wouldn't put him on the free throw line in the last minute of a must-win game. He needs to score goals for this team. Like, he had 2 counterattacks, down a man, down 1 goal. That he puts straight on the goalkeeper. And if he's going to be the best player on your team, then you can't do that.
This has always cracked me up about the way we talk about Elise, because we're always like, man, that guy's really good at soccer.
No, we had
except this. We're like, he's really good at soccer, except it's not efficient.
Yeah.
The word efficient in soccer almost literally means scoring goals.
Yeah.
So if you're a winger who's good at soccer, but you're not good at scoring goals, then are you good at soccer?
I don't know. We had the debate about him and Castillo before the season,
yeah,
and everyone like scoffed at it, and I didn't understand that at all. And I love Elise because I think he's fun. He's 21 years old, so you would hope he gets better. They're finishing. We've talked about me and Bobby over the last 10 days at this Generation Youth Cup is one of the skills that gets better as you get older because it should be muscle memory. It shouldn't be conscious as much. So he should get better at it. You would hope he does. But right now it's not good enough. And in the way that team plays in moments where they're behind, they're getting pushed defensively, he's going to be the one that the chance is going to break to because of his athleticism. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the intent there. I'm with you. Look, at home, down a man, that could have been a big result for them. They could have held strong. It could have been something to build on. It wasn't Christian Pena, though, by the way. An assist, a beautiful goal, step over is putting Machado on his heels.
Yep.
And then he draws the red card on DeMarcus Beasley. So that's the flip side of efficiency in this game. Pena's got a lot of the same attributes as physically, but he was efficient and his team won. Now, they were also up a man, but it was because he ran this thing down and DeMarcus Beasley had no choice but to foul. So
is that true?
No, you're right.
You can give up a goal and not go man down.
Yeah, you're right. He had a choice.
Or you could potentially give up a goal because he still has to finish and not go man down. But, you know, Marcus Beasley knows a lot more than me.
The professional defender's mindset there, Bobby. You're chasing a guy from behind. It's pretty early in the game. 0-0. You could shove him down and prevent the breakaway and probably get sent off.
As someone who was constantly worried about his place in the team, I definitely wouldn't have taken that red card and let myself miss a game and somebody else play in my spot.
That's a good answer.
Now we know how selfish it is.
Don Bhaji. Shout out to Don Bhaji. Can we do that?
Yeah.
People say that we won't. Hat trick. Well done. I mean, I think it was an opportunistic one outside the final goal, which was very, very, very good. Don Bhaji is a guy that we talk a lot about with the word efficiency. He showed it in this game. And Jim Curtin took a big risk. He put out a back line that had two teenagers, averaged under the age of 21. Keegan Rosenberry is the elder statesman there. Matt Real, 18. Austin Trusty, 19. Jack Elliott, I think 22, 21. Then Keegan at 24. Good in the first half, backfired in the second half, but congratulations to the Rapids on a big victory.
But the first goal is a set-piece deflection. The second goal is a deflection that lands at Bhaji's feet, and they don't score. Right? So you're going to put out two teenagers and two 21-year-olds. If you're not going to score on the other end, then
they're just going to be under pressure.
Then you should just put two teenagers up top. Like that, you got to take pressure off your back line. And if you're a David Akam or if you're Madunanin or if you're CJ,
yeah,
like that's where you need to step up and be like, if I'm going to lead this team, I'm going to help us when we're in situations where we have to go young at the back to help guide these guys through.
Montreal got a big road win, 1-0 in Seattle. And, you know, Nacho Piatti does what Nacho Piatti does, which is even if the game is dire and there's no attacking chances, he's going to pop up once and give you a dunk. That's what happened. Jason Vargas, a goal. Well done, son. But Seattle just keep – they're like – just keep blasting away at their own feet. Like, what are they doing? Another violent conduct red card? Kelvin Leerdam slapping a Montreal player?
Do you notice that Andrew's changed since he started doing instant replay? Would 2017 Andrew have said violent conduct there?
Probably not.
You're right. Yeah, I spent too much time this morning with Bobby Warshaw. Hasn't been 10 days in a hotel room, but so it's just so silly. Just come on, Seattle. You can't do that at home. You can't slap a dude. You just had Clint Dempsey get sent off via video review, and Kelvin Leerdam's going to slap somebody?
I've got no explanation.
You can't get away with that.
Don't you guys wonder, like, man to man, what goes through your mind to say my best course of action is to slap him across the face?
And like super low key, so it's like I'm going to do it so I can get away with it, which means I'm not really going to like affect him in any
right,
way.
I'm not getting any enjoyment out of that slap.
The normal course of actions, right? Maybe a headbutt. Maybe
which
punch.
I've also never understood.
Never understood that, but it's just the kind of things that you've seen, so maybe they seep into your body. Maybe, like, your hands around their throat. Maybe a push into the chest. I just don't know.
Bobby condones none of this. I'd like to put that disclaimer out there.
No, I don't condone them. I'm just thinking about what goes through a person's mind to decide the best course of action is to slap in that moment.
Yeah.
Vargas also had a filthy free kick in this game that Stefan Fry, like, pulled out of the goal, which was a great save. But sometimes when we go great save, we forget to mention, like, that was a nasty shot.
Mm-hmm.
So he could have had two.
We're going to talk about RSL in Chicago with Gam Tam and Sam. Congratulations to Sebastian Blanco of the Timbers, who looks like the difference maker we hoped and they hoped he might be.
I put him in the Bobby Warshaw list preseason of the foreign players who are going to be better in their second year.
He's been much better. Yeah. He's been much, much better. An own goal since Sporting KC passed DC United. I'm still like mind blown that Felipe Gutierrez's name is next to it in the box score. Still, this 1-0 win. KC's atop the West, but this shot would have gone out for a freaking throw-in on the
Maybe.
Other side.
It sounds like it's the first year you've watched Major League Soccer, if you're surprised that is not an own goal.
God, Kai Kamara with a big goal to help Vancouver get a win in Columbus. He celebrated that one, as you might expect. We're going to get to more of that, of course, with Sam Stashkill, Gam Tam, and Sam. We got CCL to talk about. Let's go to break. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
As the realest thing, as ancient choirs sing, a dozen blushing cherubs wheel above Los Angeles.
Back down Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. Gam Tam and Sam coming up in just 1 second. But, of course, CCL Fever is back. And we've got two huge games. Coming Tuesday, Toronto FC, Club America, BMO Field, 8 p.m. Eastern in the U.S. here, Univision Deportes, and you can stream it on Go 90 in Canada. It's also on TSN and RDS. On Wednesday, Chivas Guadalajara hosts the New York Red Bulls, 10 p.m. Eastern, Univision Deportes. Go 90 is the streaming source on that one. Make sure you watch these. We'll break them down, of course, on Thursday. But this, again, is a huge opportunity for Major League Soccer, a huge opportunity for Toronto FC, a huge opportunity for the New York Red Bulls. Seems like every year we get to this point or get to close to it, and I know we had some success in the last round, and Tijuana went down, and Tigres went down, and we all celebrated, and it was the best thing ever, but doesn't matter that much if you don't get to the final. It doesn't matter that much if you don't win the thing. At this point, that's what's eluding clubs in MLS. Yes, it's the results in Mexico. Yes, it's the results against Liga MX, but frankly, guys, I'm jacked. I'm excited. I've got the fever. I've got, you know, the cold sweats, everything that goes along with that. But I still have this kind of pit in my stomach.
Well, you should.
Because it can go away as...
You should.
Yeah, it can go away immediately.
And we'll talk about Red Bulls Chivas, but Club America are the second best team in the region. So we talk about Tigres and the giants that they are and what they're able to do. And then Club America brings South American and Mexican internationals off the bench in the attacking positions. They're just as lethal. They're just as dangerous. And so you look at TFC's job again, and it's going to be about surviving in the first leg and not trying to not give away an away goal. And then in the second leg, the same thing. They played phenomenal in the first leg against Tigres. That performance is good enough against Club America, but they got to do that again. They haven't been able to do it in MLS as much. So I still believe that they can do it. There's some question marks, obviously, anytime you go into one of these big games, but that performance, the Tigres first leg performance, is what it has to be again against Club America.
Uribe Peralta is, I don't know how to put this, he's like a fantasma. He's that guy. He's like the Hurt Gomez of yesteryear, or of yesteryear's Darwin Quintero, where you're just like, oh, God, this guy? Like, he may not be at the level he was 4 years ago, 5 years ago, but I just fully expect Uribe Peralta to just punch us in the gut as MLS fans and Toronto FC. To just, like, do all the little things that annoy you for the entire game and then score two goals in, like, the last 10 minutes. And maybe I'm just being really cynical, and I always get this way about CCL. And you mentioned MLS for Toronto, and they won 3-1 on Friday, and RSL doesn't look great, and we'll talk about that with Sam. But I don't know. It's still there. For Bobby, going into this game as someone who's played in Mexico, as someone who's been in this tournament, like, what's the right mindset? What should Greg Vanney be saying to his team? What should those guys be thinking when they think, this is the result we need, this is the effort we need, these are the things that we'll deal with over the course of these 3 or 4 days on the road?
You know, think about Toronto.
They're a BMO. What am I talking about? I was thinking about Chivas Guadalajara.
Well, it doesn't change it, though. You know, think about Toronto. Is they're such a well-oiled machine, you don't need to tell them anything. Jesse Marsh actually has a task on his hands to prepare his young group, to get the tactics right, to get the mentality right. But does it feel like Greg Vanney or Michael Bradley needs to say anything to this Toronto team? I mean, they just do what they do every single night, and that's largely why they're so good. There's no tricks. There's nothing special to what they do. They are just good at soccer. They're good at the tactics. They're good at the mentality. They're good at the execution.
Who's the most important player on the field for Toronto FC? Who's the person that has the biggest responsibility in this first leg? Is it on the attacking side because you need those home goals?
No. It's all about not giving up the
away
goal.
Is it Mavinga?
It's Michael Bradley.
Okay.
It's always Michael Bradley with this team. It's always Michael Bradley because of the way they play, the pressure they put him under in possession, not just from an offensive point of view, but like playing out of the back, getting out of pressure. So it's always him. But in this game, the key is to not give up the away goal.
It's also transitions, too. It's the same thing I said before they played Tigres. Club America is very good in transition as well, and the defensive midfielder is the most important player for your team and for Toronto FC. It's stopping those transition goals.
Where do the goals come from?
For like, which team?
Toronto. They got to score.
Well, that's the great part. You could say Jovinko is the most important player, but at the end of the day, they get goals from everywhere. I mean, Jonathan Osorio scored big goals. Josie scored big goals.
Moro could pop up and score that big goal.
Exactly. So it's tempting to say how important Jovinko is, and he certainly is, but at the same time, don't you feel like they have 10 guys that can score?
No, they've got options. They can create chances. But the thing that you have to stress was when they played Tigres, they played like they were playing the best team that they were ever going to face. That is exactly how they have to come out again. Mm-hmm. There is no, we got over the hump, and now it's downhill. This is Club America.
Well,
you're going to the Azteca. This is Henry Martin off the bench or Uribe Peralta off the bench. Jeremy Menez. This is some of the best players in the region. Again, you have to play like every mistake loses the series. Like you were talking about with Kamar Lawrence, that's how you have to play.
It's very, very well said. 3-5-2 or 4-4-2?
It has to be. I've said it all season, but it has to be 3-5-2. That puts all of your players in their best position.
I think Jeremy Menez is out for this game. I'm trying to confirm.
Is he not allowed to play in CCL?
I think he's – for some reason I was thinking he's out. I may be wrong. We'll see when that lineup comes down. Of course, 8 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday, Toronto, Club America, BMO Field, Univision Deportes, Go 90 in the U.S., TSN RDS in Canada. You had one thing to add here? No? Okay. Let's talk Chivas and New York Red Bulls. That's on Wednesday, the late game, 10 Eastern, UDN, Go 90 streaming. Red Bulls have become a darling in this competition because of what they did to – Tijuana, you know, for good reason. There was that little blip at the beginning of the second leg, and then they just laid it on. And as you said, Dave, Red Bulls 2, baby Bulls. I mean, top to bottom, this squad has become, I don't want to say complete because I think that's maybe over the top, but they've figured out a way to have solutions for a lot of different problems and depth in a way that they didn't previously have it. Because we used to talk about this team and be like, cool, who are you bringing off the bench when you need to change the game? Nobody? Oh, dope. That's why you're out of the playoffs. Oh, that's why it fell short for you. You had an 11 that could compete with everybody, but when things happen, which they inevitably do in this competition, you maybe couldn't respond. They have a better matchup. No doubt about that, they have a better matchup. They also have an opportunity to come home and finish the series at Red Bull Arena.
Now, we do have to state that will be a Red Bull Arena that will mainly be rooting for Chivas.
That's a good point.
Chivas are the largest team in Mexico. They have the biggest fan base. This is the New York metropolitan area. So it will be more comfortable. You're on your field. You're in your locker room. You're comfortable. You'll have fans there. But in terms of, like, the crowd and the energy, it's not going to feel like a pure home game. You just have to point that out
at
the start.
The Red Bulls are selling a ticket package that I think has three games or so.
Yeah, so a lot of Chivas fans are going to New York, Minnesota later this summer.
So there's Minnesota shades.
Oh, no, they already played Minnesota.
That's true. Good point.
And they beat them with the Red Bulls, too. So.
Oh,
okay. Sorry, I'm done.
Dag. You guys watched this Chivas game this weekend, I believe?
Yeah.
Did a little scouting. What are they up against?
A team that plays a not very good team. A team that has talent. Everything we said going into the Seattle game is still true. They get ripped open at times. Bobby, I think, asked the question, is there any midfield at one point when we were watching that game? Because they'll have five guys up top to attack and five guys back to defend.
What does not very good mean? Give people a reference point, a Major League Soccer reference point.
Well, they don't have a coherent style that can ever control or dominate play. So if you watch that Seattle second leg, it was pretty good epitome of what they are, which is they'll come forward and they'll try things, but it's never one consistent thing. It's not, well, we like to play through the middle, short passing to open up channels. It's never, well, we'll sit deep and counter against you, or we're going to try and cross from the sides. It was all of that smattered around, and that's kind of what this team is there's some individual talent. Pulido up top, who's enigmatic at best, and so there's no pure way that Chivas is going to try and play and beat you, which I think goes well for the Red Bulls because they know who they are. They know what they want to do when they go into this game. They're going to need a goal, most likely against the run of play to some extent. But if they come out of this game with one goal, whether it's 1-1, 1-0, 2-1 loss, 3-1 loss, they're still alive. So if Red Bulls can score one, especially early on, one, the crowd's going to turn against this team. Two, this team's going to panic. And three, the Red Bulls are playing with house money at that point.
Bobby's like blinking in space trying to just digest all of this.
One reason the Red Bull have a chance or have a good chance in this game to combat what you just said, I was taking what David said and trying to put it in reference to Red Bulls. And Red Bull's big strength is that they're very compact from front to back, moving up and back the field. And what Chivas does well is they make a game hectic. They make it stretch so that their individual players can excel. They don't have great team ethos, so if you don't have great team ethos, you just try and make it a 1v1 game everywhere. What do the Red Bulls do really well? They're really good at moving 10 outfield players up and back, side to side well. They don't make it into a 1v1 battle. They make it combative with numbers around the ball at all times. So that's my response to that. If that's what Chivas does well, that bodes well for Red Bulls.
What do we think is going to happen in these? Is an MLS team going to win one of these games? That'll be my question for you guys. Will an MLS team win in leg one of these CCL semifinals? I'm going to say – I really want to say yes. But
I'm going to say no. If Red Bulls lose 2-1, I'm counting that as a win.
Agreed.
Does that count?
I'm going to say no because I think there are some scoring draws here, at least one, and probably a loss with goals for the MLS side. So I think that's good positioning, and then you turn around and look the other way. Now, if for Toronto FC that's a 2-2 at home, that's not a good result. If it's a 1-1, okay. You can work with that.
Yeah.
It's
tough to me if TFC gives up an away goal. Because they went into Tigres and scored two goals, which was huge. But unless Jovinko gets a free kick in the same area.
And somebody bundles in an own goal.
You lose that series, though. Yeah. So it's tough to me to see a situation where TFC gives up an away goal and gets through. At the same time, I think TFC will win. Sorry. Back on this whole thing, I think TFC will win.
Okay.
I think they're going to win 1-0.
What inspired this?
I think the way they played against Tigres early on was messy. And so I think they'll see that and understand that they need to come out this game and play defensively solid first and foremost. And I think they opened up against Tigres a little bit more than they wanted to early on. Now, the goal, you could say, came later on in a counter, but it felt like Tigres was going to score earlier than that. I don't think they'll play that way. I think they'll come out, and they'll obviously have that five-man backline, but I think they'll sit a little bit deeper and just try and be controlled to start that game. Also, you'd hope that the field is a little bit better, which is more conducive to TFC.
Going to get a win, MLS team, Bobby? Yes or no?
Yes.
I'm saying no.
Yes.
Okay. I like your confidence there. You just went with it.
I don't have a great answer, but if I have to choose yes or no, I'm going to choose yes on this.
Sam Stajkal's on the line now. Gam, Tam, and Sam at Sam Stajkal on Twitter, MLSsoccer.com, national writer. Sam, what's up, man?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. So, word on the street is breaking news. Gam, Sam, and Tam is hanging out with Better Call Paul literally right now.
We actually called you, Sam, just to get Paul on the phone.
So if you could put Paul on, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Paul's driving right now, so I'm afraid I'm not going to put him on. I'm not going to jeopardize my safety like that just so you guys could have a radio show.
Gotcha. Okay, well, that's fine.
You got
fine.
Me.
Okay. At Sam Stajkal on Twitter. We just got done talking about CCL, Sam, and you talked to both sides here, the Red Bulls and Toronto FC, as they prepare for the semifinals. What did they tell you?
Well, they're both, as we saw over the weekend, they kind of both rotated their squads quite a bit, New York more so than Toronto. For TFC, it's a little bit of that makes sense, right? They were at home. There's no travel involved between their MLS match and the first leg here. So, a little more able to run guys out there and not rest them. They're both chartering. They're both bringing out all the stops on that end. For New York, I was a little bit more interested in what they were doing just because, they have Orlando and then Guadalajara and then back. Obviously Guadalajara is at altitude. It's about a mile high, a little bit less. So they said that they were informed a little bit by their game in Salt Lake earlier in the year, which they also rotated their squad for. That was in between a previous CCL series, in between legs of that. So they're training in Orlando today. They had a little regen session there yesterday, and they're flying down to Guadalajara, maybe right now even, tonight, on Monday night. And then they'll train in market tomorrow, kind of get a little bit acclimated. Obviously, you can't get all the way. You need like 2 weeks to do that. So this is kind of the best way to do it if you can't get in there early. And then they'll play on Wednesday night and be ready to go. So, yeah, we'll see how it works. But altitude's, you know, going to be a factor for both of these teams here in their away legs.
All right, that's Tuesday and Wednesday. Make sure you tune in on UDN and Go 90, TSN and RDS on Tuesday with Toronto FC Club America. Let's talk MLS. We held off on talking about RSL and the Fire to wait for you. Both these teams struggling, Sam. What's going on?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think two different issues here, right? With RSL, you have a team that was really exciting, I thought, for the second half, a team that entered the year with pretty high expectations. Didn't really lose a ton from last year, certainly. Added a few pieces with Demir Krilac, Alfredo Ortuño. So people were kind of expecting big things, and it feels like they haven't gotten out of the gates yet. They haven't been able – I mean, the biggest thing for me, they haven't been able to really connect their front four with – their center midfielders, Kyle Beckerman and Krilac, and their back four has struggled a little bit kind of throughout. So for me, that one's more of like, okay, is this going to get off the rails? Is this going to click? Are we going to see what we saw last year? You know, because that center midfield, that to me is sort of the problem right now. They have those guys. They have Ruznak, they have Savarino, they have Plata. They haven't been able to find them yet. So to me, like, that's a problem. I think it's fixable. But we'll see. They do need to have Beckerman and Krilac kind of step up a little bit, at least in their partnership. With the Fire, it's a different question, right? Everyone knows they lost some pieces this winter. David Akam, obviously a huge, huge trade to Philly, and they haven't replaced him. And, you know, we saw Ponovich the other day after the 2-2 draw against Portland. He came out and said, you know, buckle up, get ready for a couple of tough months, potentially. And that's not something you really want to hear if you're a Fire fan, right? You're expecting good things coming off of last season, a solid year. And it just doesn't look like they have the pieces to make this work right now. So until they bring in reinforcements in the attack, maybe a goalkeeper, definitely a center back, they're probably not going to be very good. And to me, that's been disappointing. Just coming off of last year and you know, everything they did last year and everything they did this winter, it seems like they've taken a pretty significant step back. So not really sure what's going on there.
All right, how about teams that deserve some love? We heard from Francisco Calvo, and we've responded to his comments. But
Sam, are you Minnesota United Hive?
No, I have no idea what Francisco Calvo is talking about. But it sounds like if you guys talked about that already, I don't need to go into my thing on it.
Yeah, we'll let that one kind of settle down and simmer before we go too deep there. But look, there are teams that we don't talk about enough. What are a couple that you're looking at right now that maybe aren't at the tip of everybody's tongues but have been doing a good job early on in the season?
Yeah, I think Vancouver's done a nice job. You know, they're up there near the top of the West at the moment, you know, early, so grain of salt. But the thing for me with the Whitecaps is their roster so much better fits Carl Robinson's vision this year than it did last year. You know, where you have Kai Kamara up top, a guy who's able to be a forward that can occupy the two center backs and head home crosses. That's exactly what they want, I think. And that's not really something that Freddie Montero is, which they had last year. And they've gotten some really good results. To me, they're set up to have a lot of success on the road, just with the way they play, the style they play, kind of sitting back and hitting you on the counter. So that, I think they deserve some love. I think New England deserves a little bit of love too. You know, that they obviously had a really rough start at Philadelphia, getting two red cards and losing. But Christian Pena, he looks like a pretty good player. Matt Turner and net. He's been pretty impressive coming out of nowhere. I mean, did you guys know his name before the season started? Because I did not.
I mean, I know a lot of Matt Turner's, so.
All right, well, there you go.
I'm just kidding. That was a terrible dad joke.
I think New England deserves a little bit of love. And I think, you know, getting back to our boy Calvo, I think Minnesota has had some good results. So I think that's kind of what he was getting at, because they have had some decent results. It was super weird timing to make that point after you lose at home. To a team that was, you know, down a man for like an hour. I don't think that rang. May have wanted to time that one up a little bit differently, but hey, they have had some positive results this season. So I think they deserve credit for those, but not after Saturday.
All right. Ariel Castillo is in the bullpen. The mailbag is prepared. Sam, we're going to let you get back to the task at hand, which is, I don't know, hanging out with Paul Tenorio. I did not know that our national writers were so chummy, but I kind of like it. We'll talk to Paul.
Yeah, Paul only made two wrong turns, I think, during this phone call. So
we'll talk to Paul about that on Thursday. Get the DL on his driving ability. Gam, Tam, and Sam every single Monday. Sam, thank you so much. With that, we're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
The last week, hands go in my pocket. I can't speak. Hop in the car and torpedo to the shack. The Shaheen, we gotta go back. When he said why, I said we gotta go. Cause I left my wallet in El Segundo.
Back on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. A little bit of a switcheroo here. Ben Bear has been shunted to the side for at least 3 days. Ariel Castillo in his place. That's because Ariel is just like globe hopping right now. Phone in hand, stockings locked on. It seems like a decent life right now.
Documenting, not stalking.
Okay, sorry, my bad.
It's professionally paid for. So
yes,
that makes
good
it
point.
Okay.
It's legal. It's completely legal. Everything is above board.
Are you in Zlatan Boys now?
No, but I was doing my job, which is social media, on site there, and he was getting ready to do an interview with Rob Stone and Alexi Lalas. And I was taking my photos for the content. You can see proof of this on the MLS Instagram feed, and Alexi taps Zlatan and points at me and says, "Oh, just get used to it. She'll be following you everywhere." And then Zlatan looked at me and laughed.
Well, now you guys are
what
friends.
Kind of laugh was
so
it
now?
Like a ha ha ha. He was like in a very
laugh.
Jovial mood.
Was that the clip they cut in of him cracking up?
I didn't see that actual clip, so probably. I don't know what was going on, but he was in a real good mood at that point.
Rob Stone apparently sprayed him with the Zlatan cologne, which is a stroke of genius.
Yeah, that's great reporting.
Like, that is, I mean,
journalism.
If you want to put somebody at ease, that's a decent way to do it. Yeah. Stalking might not have been the right word. Before we get to that, I felt like I was stalking these two at GA Cup in Frisco because you're basically on the air for like 10 straight days.
Yeah. Good times.
Tell us, what did you take away from it? How did MLS sides do?
Yeah, so there's two divisions. Champions Division's the better division MLS teams qualify for. Premier Division's the lower division that the other MLS teams that don't qualify go into. Seattle Sounders won the Premier Division in the final against New York Red Bulls. And then there was two Brazilian teams, Flamengo and Atletico Paranaense, that won the Champions Divisions because it turns out international teams are really good at soccer.
But NYCFC had a pretty good match against Real Madrid,
yeah.
No, right?
NYCFC played well. FC Dallas played really well. They beat Monaco, which is one of the best academies in the world. LA Galaxy played well. They beat Pachuca, who ended up getting through as a semifinalist. Bobby Warshaw was there the whole time. Bobby, is there anything? This was my fourth tournament, by the way, guys. So I forgot this, but the first tournament, the first game I did, Weston McKennie played it for FC Dallas. And now we've come all the way back around, where he's the best player on the U.S. national team.
Incredible American soccer bragging rights.
I didn't even remember.
I liked him when he was back in Frisco,
exactly.
Right?
For FC Dallas youth teams. Bobby, this was your first tournament. Did anything stand out for you?
We did 16 games over 5 different days, so I have very little left to say about under-17 soccer, except that I really enjoyed it. It was cool to watch these players develop, see where they've come since I was there 10 years ago, to see how we compare to international squads. And a quick synopsis is, at soccer playing, at passing, at trapping, at general possession, American sides are just as good, if not better, than national sides. It's literally just the other parts, the intangibles, knowing how to win a game, knowing how to play through adversity, that the American side struggled at. American and Canadian, sorry.
Well, yeah, we did the interview with Jan Westerhoff that was on ETR last week, and I asked him about, like, the little things. He called it smarts that you do off the ball. That's one of the things you see from a youth level up, which is MLS teams struggling in those moments and international teams knowing how to get out results. But what, like Bobby said, the average player in MLS at this level is better than it used to be. And that's the part. Now, the top end, the superstars, I don't know that part's changed, right? So if you look back 10 years and you think about Diego Fagundes and what he was like when he was 16, I don't know that these kids are better than that. But it seems like, on the whole, MLS teams are going to be built with these players at fullback, at holding midfield, as your backup, stuff like that.
And that's because there's academies and there's structure. But what happens when there's academies and structure? There's not as much creativity. There's not as much room to freelance on the field, which worries me that we're not creating more stars. Because back in the day, before there was such impressive structure within a team, there had to be a guy who figured it out, a guy that took charge. And that was valuable to create a higher-end player.
One other thing that was really cool to see is some teams are seriously playing top-down. So you look at Columbus Crew SC's Academy, which Greg Berhalter's son plays in, which has to be a lot of pressure. They play the same way as the first team. NYCFC's similar, FC Dallas, although there was a debate for 10 days about what FC Dallas style is at the MLS level, but they feel like a similar team. So that's cool to watch players be ready to step in. Seattle won the Premier Division. They have two guys who signed professional contracts in Azriel Gonzalez and Ray Serrano, who both starred in this tournament, and Marlon Vargas as well was another star attacker. They were the best team we saw. So if you're watching Sounders, if you want to watch S2, they're all going to get minutes on USL, which is the other big part of this. George Bella was at this tournament. 3 days later, he scored a goal for Atlanta 2 this weekend against the Charlotte Independents. So like these guys you're going to see earlier on now in this USL setup, but there's a lot of exciting players.
So on to more important things. Britt Bird hit us up. She says, Ariel, after starting the season with 5 wins and 15 goals, I worry our rowdy boys, a.k.a. the New York Red Bulls, are getting too rowdy. They need to find inner peace with some restorative yoga. Which poses are more evocative of our boys in red? She's thinking for Tim Parker, tree pose. My man's thighs alone are as big as a tree, she says. For BWP, warrior 2 pose, flexible, balanced, ready to strike. Luis Robles, extended triangle, maximum reach to block any incoming shots. For Carlos Rivas, a whole dang sun salutation, as Carlos is the complete package and our guiding star. And then for Sean Johnson, child's pose, she says, we expect him to find himself kneeling on both knees with his head down after the many goals we put in against him.
I was about to say, why Sean Johnson?
That was, I think Britt's a he, but very extensive.
Messed that one up.
No,
I
it's
have a
okay.
history of
it's all
screwing
good.
This up.
Was that a question, though? I mean, I do appreciate
I don't think
the.
Do you agree with these pose recommendations?
Do they strike you as appropriate? In case you didn't know, Ariel teaches yoga, and I've been.
Are these
like,
all real poses?
Yeah, they're all real poses. Yeah. I'm pretty down with Warrior 2 for BWP because that's something that requires a lot of strength, but also calm at the same time, and I think he definitely has it. What was it for Carlitos again?
For Carlitos, it was a whole sun salutation.
Okay. Sure. Why not?
If I was, what's the best, you know, as someone who has dabbled in the yoga to try to be more flexible and strong in their core and or hips, what's the best, what's your advice for the aspiring MLS yogis out there?
For core strength, I would do Navasana, which is boat pose, which is definitely why everyone is listening to this podcast.
Hey, these are the sorts of things, if you haven't been paying attention, that we do in the mailbag all the time. We have more of this coming,
hip,
by the way.
Hip flexibility, I would suggest like a low lunge with a twist, a lizard lunge. I don't know. There are a lot. But
have you talked to MLS players and teams about the yoga that they do?
I have not. Yeah. I absolutely would. I know the Red Bulls yoga. I've seen with the Whitecaps did it on the beach, right, during preseason in
that's
Hawaii.
A great yeah,
so.
That's a good place to be like, I'm super into yoga.
Yeah. Hawaii, for sure.
Kevin Chan, shout out to my guy. He hits us up all the time with good stuff. He's asking about El Tráfico and Zlatan, which we have a lot of here. He says, would have been okay from an LA Galaxy point of view if Zlatan had just ripped his shirt off after the second goal, tossed in the crowd, got his second yellow, and walked into the locker room tunnel without even turning around to acknowledge the red card.
It's true. Actually, you know, even if it had ended a draw at that point, 3-3, it still would have been an amazing story. And I think
he's saying after the second goal. He's saying in stoppage time.
To get a second goal.
Oh, after his second
score
goal.
Score the winner,
right,
take it off, walk into the tunnel, peace out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that would have been incredible too. But, you know, we got all the awesome post-press conference quotes anyway. So it all ended pretty
and this is like
fashion.
The nerdiest, weirdest thing to complain about. But taking your shirt off should not be a yellow card. The moment they made it a rule, I think it was like 10 years ago or something like that, it was wrong, and it has been wrong since then.
I don't think that's nerdy. I'm totally with you. I think
okay,
it's a buzzkill.
Like, it's a buzz. And, like, yeah, you watch highlights of great moments in soccer history, and the shirt comes off in the crowd
right.
in the
I
celebration.
I think tamping down on celebrations is something that other sports
nice.
do, and I'm not really with
that.
It.
Not the only one with a cough today.
Yeah, I was about to say fake cough, not a good time for that one, but I appreciate that complaint.
My thing is, like, just I'm with you on it. Just choose the right time. Like 1-0 in the 15th minute, mediocre goal. Don't break the shirt off.
That
even
was
if
the
it's
time.
Special to you, like make sure that it.
So you
fits
think
the
that
moment.
Ref should give cards based on whether or not it's a good
yeah,
moment to
yeah,
rip
for
the
sure.
Shirt
this
off?
Is a judgment call.
I'm down for that.
They already get yelled at.
So now
enough.
Instant replay. Everybody is gonna be.
Like everybody in the stadium knows if it's appropriate or not. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's your first goal.
We'll definitely leave that up to all of the pro favorites that everyone online loves, not to name any names.
Steven Trapattoni in Alhambra, California. He was at the 1-10 Derby yesterday. That's his name. He sent us a whole reasoning for that, but we're still sticking with El Tráfico until I hear different. The game was terrific, he says. Great comeback by the Galaxy. LAFC may look like the better team, but the result shows different. He's counting all the comebacks in MLS, and he says this is number 3. He's got a long list of comebacks here. Number 1 for him, 1996 MLS Cup, Bobby.
Wow.
You're feeling great about this one. LA up 2-0 on DC. United comes back to win an OT, a golden goal by Eddie Pope to win the first MLS Cup. Bobby said that's the best MLS game of all time. Number 2, 2013 MLS playoffs, Western Conference semifinals, LA San Jose, two-leg affair.
2003, not 2013.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I misread that one. Good call on that.
Was that the D-Row free kick on Hartman?
Yeah, this was the LA. Yeah, LA up 2-0, then LA up 4-0, then San Jose comes back to tie it and 4-4 and goes to Golden Go and wins 5-4 in OT. So that was a great one. Of course, they won their second MLS Cup that year. And then he says 2018, the Galaxy debut. This is number 3
Wait,
for him.
Did you talk about his 110 Derby thing last show?
No, we missed that.
Okay, well, that's why he's calling it whatever. He's a Chivas USA fan, though.
Oh.
This guy gave his whole history, which we didn't put down here.
Oh, 1996, New York. Oh, yeah, I missed two.
He was
a
Metro Stars ticket holder. Then he became an LA Galaxy fan. And then he went to high school with Martin Vasquez, who coached Chivas USA. So he became a Chivas USA fan.
So what about
now?
Now
he's an LAFC fan.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know if he's a fan. It says just he's a season ticket holder.
So you don't think he's a supporter?
But on his 1997, he says LA Galaxy fan. But on 2018, he says just season ticket holder. I think he's just an MLS fan that wants to have a piece of the action at both stadiums.
I feel like MLS is one of the few leagues that has people like that, you know, like many of them. And I, you know, it's cool. It's a way of watching the game.
Stop if that's the case.
I think that is the case. Let us know, man. Let us know. Mike from South Carolina, who gets a higher goals per 90 in their first MLS season? Joseph Martinez or Zlatan? I looked it up. Joseph Martinez, 1.12 goals per 90. In 2017. Right now, Zlatan is 9.5 goals per 90. So what do we think?
Joseph?
I think Joseph will have more travel games on the road for sure. And he's going to start more.
Yeah.
But I, you know, not to take away from either of them.
Zlatan said he was running on fumes, which is one reason why he hit it from 40.
I mean, he arrived literally fewer than 48 hours before that, you know? And it's funny because we were told that he'd actually been sleeping in Manchester on California time, which, of course, for like 2 weeks. But still.
Oh, my God. What a legend.
Yeah. What a legend. So he's just waking up, going to bed like at odd hours for literally 2 weeks. But, you know, he got there Thursday night. So.
He also, so at the end of the game, they like do a little circle with the Galaxy players on the field.
I was right there.
Yeah, right. And Ariel's getting the shot.
Literally behind them.
Shout out to Albert Lanzillo, also in there getting the shot. Then Brendan Hannon comes in and tells Zlatan you have to do media, and he says one sec and bends over. And I thought he was going to vomit on national television.
Oh, yeah. There was a moment when he was sort of like bending over and like drinking his water and having a moment there. Yeah.
Where I was like, okay, this guy definitely just got off.
What was it
and
like
then he rallied.
What was it like to be in that stadium?
It was great. I mean, obviously, you know, the first half was amazing in its own way, right? Because it was just like, wow, the Galaxy are getting slaughtered on their own turf, and Carlos Vela was just beasting, and he was amazing. And you know, it's no one's that part is getting overshadowed, but he had an amazing first half. I mean, he had an amazing game in general. Like what happened at the end, there's just nothing any human could do about that, really. So it was crazy because at the first half you're like, okay, wow, this is gonna be, you know, we're never going to hear the end of this, right? Now we're really never hearing the end of this. But, you know, there was a moment when Legette got that goal, and I was like, okay, you know, it won't be a complete shutout. And then it kept building. And then just the second that you saw Zlatan warming up and everyone's yelling, we want Zlatan, it was like, it was crazy. I mean, it was definitely, for me, one of the top regular season MLS experience ever. I mean, everyone was just like losing their minds.
Atmosphere-wise? Because you've been at Cup, you've been at some crazy games.
For a regular season, for sure. Especially because, you know, you go to these big stadiums and you expect them to be really loud, and StubHub is not one of the biggest ones. And especially having been to the Galaxy last season when it wasn't good, I mean, that was like the old Galaxy was back, the old crowd was back, and you can't deny the passion of the LAFC fans were there too. They were super loud getting in. They were super loud there, and you could feel like the intensity and the hatred for real.
I would add in, I'm not sure the Galaxy crowd was ever that loud, even though when they were really good. That's why I'm interested to hear how it would compare to an Atlanta game now. What was the total capacity with the new stands?
I mean, it's, you know, it's still...
StubHub or Atlanta? StubHub. StubHub's like 27.5.
Even yeah. with the new Chargers stands?
But it doesn't matter because that's still less than half of like the random Atlanta...
It felt as loud as Seattle and Portland because it didn't used to, even when the Galaxy were really good.
Yeah, okay, so I haven't been to Portland. I have been to Seattle and I have been to Atlanta. Yeah, it was loud. And it was felt louder because everyone's closer too, but it was just everyone was losing their minds and you could feel this like sort of release of all the pent-up anger and stuff from last season, and it was crazy. It was unreal.
Was the moment of the weekend Jonathan Dos Santos's self oh my God, yeah. about the goal and Gio's
going crazy. And I actually don't think it's Jonathan. I think it's their brother who
took the video.
He's like on content duty, it seems
nice.
Like.
Yeah,
all of the time.
I actually bumped into them like walking into the suite.
But they're going
and their family, yeah.
They're just going absolutely crazy. And I'm looking at him like, yeah. There's a ledge there, Jonah, and you're like jumping on your chair.
Yeah.
Nobody fall over. Nobody fall
but
over.
But that was awesome. The most, that's the surreal part about, you know, MLS and LA. It's like you have Zlatan on the field talking smack to Carlos Vela, you know, Ashley Cole giving him the assist or whatever in 2018. It's just, it's surreal. Like someone said that it felt like FIFA, and it did feel like FIFA because it felt like fake that this was happening in real life.
Gabe in Michigan, I love this league, guys. Total neutral here. I just heard for the storylines. Ibra's first goal excited me in a way few soccer moments ever have. I was jumping up and down watching the game surrounded by non-soccer fans, and even they were in awe. Mm-hmm. Fantastic showcase for this league and the game. This league should not forget about the value of aging stars. I'm happy with the direction we're headed. Youth-focused, North and South Americans, but there's nothing wrong with bringing star players from abroad who still have something left to give. Ibra, David Villa, Bastian Schweinsteiger, all fun to watch. Drogba was awesome to watch in his first year. There's a balance to be found. P.S. He says he's watched the goal 10-plus times, the volley, the half volley. Beautiful call from John Strong, added to the moment in a great way. Perry in Portland. So this was the second game that Liam Ridgewell didn't play, in parentheses, thank God, for the Timbers. What's it going to take to get him back? Parentheses, hope not. Or is he done? Parentheses, hopefully. Also, are the Timbers going to get some new center backs during the summer transfer window? Another parentheses, hopefully. So that's 2 weeks in a row without Liam.
I know. I don't know. I'm Liam Ridgewell has so much commitment to the Timbers, I think, and he's really in on it. And I'm not sure that I really like this narrative where everyone's kind of pooping on him.
That he doesn't care anymore?
He cares. I mean, I feel it that he cares. Having spoken to him, I know that he cares. So I don't know. I don't know. I don't like going down this road, really.
I wouldn't be shocked if in August, 5 or 6 of the Timbers starters are different from the team that started the first game of the season. Mm-hmm. I think Savarese didn't have time. And I agree with you because I've talked to Ridgewell about how much he cares. You get older in your career and sometimes some things matter to you and some things don't. And if the small details start to go away, you're not the same player. But across the board, I mean, Lawrence Olam, obviously that handball. And it's like, what's going on in 2018 that Lawrence Olam's starting for the Portland Timbers in central midfield? And I think we're going to see a couple players that change over this time so that Savarese starts to get a team that like looks like what he wants it to look like.
Good win for Portland. Sebastian Blanco, as we said, had a nice game.
2-2 tie.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't count as a win.
Oh, man. I got to get more sleep. The mythical Toronto Duck here. I still don't know why he calls himself the Toronto Duck, or she. Hot take between Jordan Morris being injured, Nico Lodero being overrated, and the rest of the spine being over the hill. Seattle aren't going to make the playoffs this season.
Oh.
So we didn't put in the 18 messages from Seattle fans of the, like, it seems there's a lot going on outside the field that no one wants Seattle to make the playoffs again.
I couldn't care less what happened with Seattle.
Yeah, Seattle fans seem to think that they're a victim currently.
I want to know, is there a fan base that doesn't feel victimized? Because, I mean, Seattle are having a terrible beginning of the season, but, I mean, they've had a couple of great seasons and everyone supported them and everyone wants them to be good. I mean, so I don't know where that's coming from.
K Kevin from Milwaukee, after an entire month of 2018, FC Dallas, NYCFC have yet to lose. On the other hand, Chicago, DC, Portland, Seattle have yet to win. My original question was going to be, who is most likely to get their first win or loss next week? But that's boring. Like Ben Bear level Baron T boring. Wow, shady, shady, shady.
And he's not even here to defend himself.
I know, I know. Perfect seasons almost never happen, he says, which is what makes him so special. I want to know who's the most likely to have a perfect undefeated season and who is most likely to have a winless perfect season.
Nobody's going to have an undefeated season.
There's no invincibles here.
But most likely is NYCFC again.
Yeah, between them and FC Dallas. I think it's more interesting to do if we had to imagine a future in which one team didn't win a game for the rest of the year between Chicago, D.C., Portland, and Seattle, which is the more likely future?
D.C. United.
Maybe through the opening of Audi Field.
Four teams.
That's the thing. Is that the season is so long. Like being
it's
undefeated
never
would be.
Happen.
Yeah, it's just not.
But of those four teams, you assume at some point Portland will play a home game. And they will win.
There's no assumption. That will
happen. That's happening in 2 weeks.
Thank
weekends.
You. Seattle at some point will get enough pieces on the field to win a game.
Yep.
Now you're looking at Chicago and DC United.
And Sam Stajko kind of bagged on Chicago and saying, hey, they're going to be bad for
a while.
Now,
in fairness, both of them will win games in 2018. I'm not saying they won't.
DC also had a 3-win season, I'm pretty sure, just a couple years ago.
But of the two I had to pick, I'd say DC United. Although they'll get the Audi Field bump.
Yeah, but I just think they're suffering from being nomadic right now, for sure.
That definitely.
PPS, Kevin says, I know picking on Ben Bear's guarantees is low-hanging fruit. Couldn't resist. Ben, thanks for the work you do. I, too, like the stats and the expected goals data you put out after every game fascinates me. So, he's from Wisconsin. Wisconsin, he says.
Aww.
So he's just trolling a fellow Badger there. Rob from Athens, Georgia, is drinking the Atlanta United Kool-Aid. What do you think about Atlanta's 1-0 win being the team's best game ever? I know it's a small sample size, but hear me out. Atlanta's 7-0 beating of New England and the 6-1 snow game in Minnesota are amazing, yet here they held their shape against the home team. It was ugly, but the defensive composure was amazing to watch. Would love to know our thoughts. Bobby, I want to know what you think as a, defender who's maybe had to buckle down in a similar situation about a game like this. How did Atlanta United leave? Because they took a picture in the locker room. They acted extremely happy for the 1-0 win. Now, the water bottles, as we said, were like freezing. It was a bizarre game. Should they feel happy? Is this a great result?
I hadn't thought about it as the biggest win or the best win in their history, but I don't hate it either. I like that idea. Because you're right, this was the exact kind of game that I wondered if Atlanta could pull out. If I think about who they are as a team and their potential success throughout the year, I would have thought this exact kind of game and said, they can't do this, therefore I don't believe in them long term. And they flipped that. They did this, and this was probably the one big question we had about them, wasn't it?
It was. Brad in Seattle here finishes off. We talked about which MLS players could potentially be elected president of a country after Timothy Weah's father, of course, you know him well, is the president there at, I'm blanking on the country,
Liberia.
Yep. The obvious choice for MLS player to become U.S. president is Tim Howard. He's previously been named Secretary of Defense. Shaka Hislop for Trinidad and Tobago. We had Didier Drogba as a pretty clear and obvious possibility. Cuauhtemoc Blanco had a career in politics, but that one kind of floundered, I think. Is there anyone else that we can imagine being a statesman of some sort?
Oh, wait.
Patrice Bernier.
Patrice Bernier is
a good
call.
Oh, good, yeah.
Great call.
He has a good his likability rating is high, right?
Very high.
Very high, yeah.
I'm struggling for others.
He can wear nice colored full socks like Justin Trudeau.
Yeah, and he's not too flashy, and he's very well liked where he comes from.
So I'm in on the Patrice one, and that's kind of the only thing I'll give you.
Okay.
Although, a little half nugget here. I don't know if I've said it on this show because I've been on with Bobby for 10 straight days. So I don't know where anything happened. Kyle Duncan, right back for New York Red Bulls, I think is the cousin of Timothy Weah and therefore related to
George Weah.
Nice.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Family comes full circle.
It does. It does. Okay, that's it for us here. Big thanks to Sam Stajkal, Ashley Cole, Ariel Castillo, Dave Goss, Bobby Warshaw, Andrew Wiebe. We've got a growing cast here. We'll see you on Thursday, everybody.